Elizabeth Tomba, what a joy to hear you and to speak with you again.
Same with you, Pierre.
A lot has happened since the last time we did a podcast. And the most important thing is that we launched ElizabethTombaMasterclasses.com. Please remember, masterclasses in plural.
Yes.
And it's a huge success. And I'm very glad to see that your entire work is now online. It is very, very exciting for all of us.
For me too, Pierre. And I must say what's so nice in this platform is that it's really a view, not only all the masterclasses I did around the world, but also what we do in Resonance, all the idea, the philosophy of everything. And I'm very happy that one can feel this in the platform now.
Yeah, I think it's a very unique platform. There are many musical platforms and masterclasses online, but your platform has a unique quality, which is to share the videos of the masterclasses as well as share the theory behind the masterclasses and behind your teaching. So I'm going to release a masterclass on Chopin's First Nocturne. And I am really wanting to ask you, if I say the word Chopin, what comes to mind without thinking about it? What comes to your mind?
My best friend. I mean, somebody which I'm in relation soul to soul since I was a little girl. And sometimes I really have the feeling he's there. And when I play his music, there is not one point, one double point, virgule that I don't understand. I don't know how to tell you. It's such a proximity of soul.
Yeah, I mean, one can feel that in your recording of the complete Chopin Nocturnes. What I would like to know is, when did you first study a Chopin Nocturne? What age were you?
I was 12 years and old, and it was the number Opus 27, number 2, that I will remember all my life. And I remember the bar 5. I could replay it 100 times. I was so touched, so deeply touched by the message of this melody and this moment in this bar. And also, when I was very young, I happened to know that he was almost as young when he composed all that. Maybe not, but if you can imagine the F minor, he did it when he was 19. So it's unbelievable, really, for us to know that. Otherwise, you know, when I recorded the Nocturne, I was a month before so ill. And I'm never ill, as you know, so it was unbelievable. And I had what? You can imagine the proximity with Chopin. I had a double pneumonia.
Yeah, pneumonia. Yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And everybody told me, you cannot do this this recording because pneumonia and so heavy like this, you have 3-4 months of recovering. I remember I was playing. The first weeks I couldn't do anything. But afterwards, I was like, somehow, how can I tell you this? I was him, and I was breathing like him. I was coughing like him. And it was a very strange experience.
Wow, that's beautiful what you're saying. And so you understood also the short phrases, the long phrases, and you speak a lot about breathing in your teaching. And so you felt that he was breathing a certain way, I suppose.
I understood what is the rubato, Chopin rubato, when I did this recording and during also this illness of the pneumonia. Because I really felt in my body that you cannot play without breathing, and breathing at the right moment, because when you're inspired in a phrase, you don't do the same thing than when you expire. And you have more time in inspiring, and the touch also is different. And it's very, very important to breathe at the right moment, Chopin music.
Mm. You speak a lot in your masterclasses about the idea of complete sort of finishing of the phrase and complete finishing of every single sections. Do you think it's any relationship to his disease and condition?
No, because I think it's really the same for every composer and every phrase. And in the very moment you understand that there is no sound without silence, and that music can appear when you hear between the sound and not when the sound only appear, then you can phrase. You can phrase only if you are in between. And the in-between time, also in our life, is finally the most important. What's happening between things?
Mm, that's beautiful. I really totally connect with that. You also have a use of the pedal. I think you told me once that the use of the pedal in Chopin is different from any other composers. Can you expand on that?
He knew that so well, you know. He's the first composer who really wrote the sign of the pedal so precisely, but so precisely. And somehow what I call the loneliness of the note in Chopin music, you can reveal this with the technique of the pedal, because it's very quick, but there is a moment where you breathe the pedal out, because pedal is a parameter to increase the sound or decrease the sound. I mean, you can breathe into the sound with the pedal or expire the sound. And in the Chopin music, you have this melody, and sometimes he just take away the pedal just before the next bar, so that you can hear the melody alone, the tone alone, what I call the loneliness of the note in Chopin. And this is somehow beautiful.
Yes, and when I watch you play Chopin, so there's a very specific use of the soft pedal or the left pedal. Can you speak more about that, how you play between the two pedals?
Yes, you know, we have not a lot of parameters to change, to make our alchemy, because the piano is a percussion instrument and we have to make it sing. So we have the comment dit, le poids, you have the weight, you have the quickness of the articulation, the sound, yeah, the key, and the pedal. So the two pedals are very, very important, because sometimes we just use a quarter of the left pedal and a very little bit of the right pedal, and you breathe between. Actually, you know what, Pierre? The feet of a pianist breathe. They have to. And they have to breathe with the music. You know, sometimes we know with our student, when they have problem with pedal, that it's very clearly in connection with the relation we have with the death. Because the sound come from silence and go back to silence. But if I put my feet in the pedal, the sound is immortal until I take it away. And it's very important to have a foot who knows and who accepts life and death, expiring and inspiring, and not willing to make it lengthen what is not true.
That's beautiful. So in the Chopin Nocturnes, we have moments of, let's say, dream and contemplation, as well as sometimes middle sections that are very, very difficult technically. And so often you hear the contrast, but somehow the fast and passionate section is always hard. How do you approach these fast and passionate sections yourself?
I don't really make a difference between this, because it's like in our life. We have in 1 second the possibility to be furious or to be sad or to be, you know. So we have this in our inside soul possibilities and capacity, although we don't understand, because the emotion in the nocturne are much above the words. I mean, they tell much more, and our words are too feeble, too weak to say all what's inside. And the difficulty really in the nocturne is the connection between the left hand and the right hand. Because what I really understood very, very soon is that Chopin is a polyphonic composer and not a melodic composer. And there are always a hidden voice in the left hand, in the middle of the what could be a simple accompaniment, but it's never simple. There is always a secret inside that you have to point, but very delicately, you know, and in connection, in the right connection with the right hand. And this is the richness in Chopin.
Yeah. There is a masterclass on the third sonata by Chopin where you speak a lot about that.
Oh, yes.
And do you remember?
Yeah, maybe yeah, in the second theme of the C minor sonata can be.
Also, yes, definitely. It's mm-hmm. My question also is that I'm sort of interested in knowing why did he call them nocturnes? What does it mean, a nocturne? What does it mean to you, a nocturne?
I like the sun, you know, but there is something very strange in my life, is that I always see the moon. But also during the day, I'm the only one who's like, look, there is the moon there. Although the moon is very little and transparent with the blue sky. Nocturne is the world of the moon. The moon is not only nocturne, you imagine, it's the night, it's what is very introvert and so on. But it's not the case. The moon can be also during the day. And for me, nocturne is the transparency of the good and the bad, on the light and the shadow. It is this, equilibre, the balance between this duality. And never play the nocturne, Pierre, as if it was only a music of the introversion, the sadness, the night. No. It is the way to go to the real light.
I understand now. Before our interview, I listened again to this magnificent CD of yours of the Nocturnes. And why is that? That the moment you play one phrase, dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-da, I sort of cry. Why? What did you do for me to cry at the beginning of two bars, for instance?
It's very difficult to answer you, Pierre. I'm very happy that you can be touched with this. Maybe the beginning of this nocturne is in a levare, no, in this inspiration, and it's also coming from. It's not on the first bar. It's before. It's just coming from somewhere, and very often the music of Chopin don't begin at the beginning. It's like taken from. It's cosmic. It's coming from so far away, in us too, you know. And when you begin this, those are notes who make for you the trip immediately to your most secret internal world. And can you imagine that there are people, they do, I don't know, yoga, meditation for many, many years. And Chopin have this unbelievable capacity to make you do this trip, this journey, which is the key of life, that we have to not to go from external to internal, but from internal to external, and understand that the sound also come from this place inside ourselves, this place of silence, of magic, of God somehow.
Yeah, so as a conductor, I hear that somehow there's a rubato. Can we tell our listener what a rubato is? So I hear dee da dee dee da da. So it's sort of regular notes, but what you do in between the notes is so special. Can you speak more about it?
Pierre, it's so difficult to speak about this because, you know, from Si to Do, and then Do to Re, you need less time than from Ti-ra-di-ra-di-ra. Because between those two notes now, Re-La, there are more space, but also more space in what it reveal in yourself, in your affective world. So you cannot play them exactly the same, I wouldn't say tempo, because it's not a question of changing the tempo, you know. But just to hear and to understand that between si, do, do, re, and re, la, there is a world opening there, you know?
Yeah. There's also a relationship between the voice, because singers also will take more time in a longer interval than in a short interval.
And exactly.
So I think, yeah, there is definitely the inspiration. We know that he loved Donizetti, Bellini, and all these wonderful, wonderful Italian composers, right?
Yes, absolutely, Pierre. And also the bel canto. And sometimes... From the point of phenomenologically melodic rules, when you go to a higher note, you have to give this higher note the dynamic, the just dynamic, which is normally more than an upper tone, no? So if you do ta-ti, and so you have to go there. But in the bel canto, we do the contrary. We take the note from inside, and dynamically more piano, no? Which is the contrary of what we say, phrasing correct, no? Why? Because doing the contrary gives a lot of, created an immense opposition, an immense, contrast. And Chopin knew that. And we have to do this. And there are a lot of parts in the Nocturne, of course, but also Etude and Sonata, where in the high point he does a pianissimo, like in the bel canto. And I heard that, I think it's Berlioz who says in his written that in the Barcarolle, you know, at the end of the Barcarolle, at the high, high point, suddenly everybody was breathless, no? Because he did it pianissimo. And that created a shock, maybe more than if he would have done it fortissimo, you know? So, and I think he did it because he knew the force of the bel canto, the strengthness of the bel canto.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree with you on this one. And so the impact you have on listeners with your Nocturne is such that the Nocturne Opus 48, number 2, actually got more than 4 million listens.
Oh.
What do you say about that? It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm very happy because the Nocturne is really a way to get into the most beautiful thing we have inside us without knowing it somehow. They permit yourself, they give you the chance to know that there is in yourself something bigger than you.
Yeah, and so we know that Chopin was a great teacher and had many, many students. Actually, he's sort of reduced his concert activities to dedicate himself to teaching. So you teaching a Nocturne, do you have a different approach than you studying a Nocturne for yourself?
Of course. Of course, because when I study a Nocturne, I know exactly what I want to hear, and I will sometimes be hours on one phrase to have the gram, the just gram weight on every note. And, you know, but when I teach the Nocturne, it's very difficult sometimes because I don't want the pupil to play like me. I want him to feel what is right in the music, because there are things which are right, and we have to know it, how to reveal the tension and the impact and everything and distension and so on. But then it has to come from himself. It has, and we don't suffer equally. And sometimes I hear somebody playing a Nocturne and a pupil, no? And I say to myself, good that he doesn't know suffering more. You know, and I will not show him. And when he asked me, how do you do that? I just said, look, I have une épaisseur, how do you say? A thickness of suffering bigger.
So the nocturnes are really, it seems as if the nocturnes are easy, you know, sort of every student, you know, from the age of 10 to whichever age, sort of approach the nocturnes and play the nocturnes and so on and so forth. Do you think we can actually go beyond just playing the notes and just playing right?
That we cannot do for any composer and never. But let me tell you really, Pierre, something. It's much difficult to play a nocturne correctly than an étude, because étude you can hide yourself behind the technique exactly, and it's going to be people will be very admirative that you can play so quickly and so strong and so fortissimo, I don't know what. But in the nocturne you cannot hide yourself. And if every gram, as we said before, is not at the right place, you're not going to make the alchemy of the notes of the nocturne becoming music, really.
This is wonderful, Elizabeth. Thank you for sharing all of this relationship you have with the music. I always have such intense pleasure to conduct you in the Chopin concertos. We've recorded them actually in London at the Abbey Road Studios of all places. And this was just a marvelous experience. And we have many more concerts where we will play the F minor concertos, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But it was also for me, Pierre, the most beautiful experience in Abbey Road, but most of all when we play together, because you are the conductor of the singer, and I can see it in your baguette. That it's not a wood thing. It is. It's alive, and it's hearing every refined thing I can do, or rubato, and it's just wonderful to play under your direction. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's like I go to heaven when I work with you. It's just truly, you share all of this relationship with Chopin. Elizabeth, thank you so much. And we'll talk again very, very soon, I hope.
Yeah, thank you so much, Pierre.